Today on Focal Point, Pastor Mike Fabares wonders if your faith is futile.
If you're saying, as I'm assuming we're all saying, God, I want to be used by you to do something, whatever it is. I'll be the water boy, I'll be the towel guy, the running back, the defensive back, I'll be the quarterback, I'll be whatever you want me to be. And when he does call you to step up to something, I don't want you to make the same mistake that Zechariah by going, I don't know if I believe I can do this. I mean, that is so typical of even us, isn't it? Prepare to have your faith stretched.
As a believer, you're already on God's team, and at any moment God might call your number and put you in the game. But will you be ready when the time comes? Would you be raring to go or dragging your feet? Well, today on Focal Point, Pastor Mike Fabares continues his review of the motley crew God recruits to face major league challenges of faith and obedience. And we're finding some getting into the game a little reluctantly. We're looking at one such soul in Zechariah, God's doubting senior.
God is a God who chooses some pretty ordinary people to do some extraordinary things, to do things that are far beyond what we could ever ask or imagine. This is the God that we worship. This is the God that we read about. And it certainly is the God that we meet, enlisting various characters in Luke chapter 1 to do some amazing things. Look at the first one we run into here in Luke chapter 1, beginning in verse number 5. As the narrative begins, we run into a priest, an elderly priest named Zechariah. He had a wife, it says, named Elizabeth. But, verse 7 says, they had no child. Well, here's the deal. According to Psalm 127, to have kids is a reward from the Lord. Now, here's a priest and a daughter of the priestly line. They had a good marriage. They were righteous. They did what God asked them to do. And here's the thing. God never rewarded them with children. And they were both advanced in years, so pretty much they'd given up on this. Verse 8. While he was serving as a priest before God, when his division was on duty, remember I said twice a year, you get 2 weeks of this duty. According to the custom, verse number 9 says, of the priesthood, he, that is Zechariah, was chosen by lot to enter the temple of the Lord and burn incense. Verse 11. And there appeared to him an angel of the Lord. Now, I'm already nervous about my once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to burn the incense in the holy place. This is the highlight of his career as a priest. And standing there was this appearance of an angel at the right side of the altar of incense. And this hasn't happened. It's been 400 years, right, between Malachi, which is the last book, not only in our English canon, but it's the last book in the chronology of the Old Testament, right? We don't have Revelation. We don't have angels coming down. We don't have any books of the Bible being written, right? Angel appears. Zechariah is freaked out by this when he saw him, and fear fell upon him, as it would upon you. And the angel said to him, verse 13, do not be afraid, Zechariah, for your prayer has been heard. And what's that? Your wife, Elizabeth, will bear you a son. You're going to have a kid. You're going to call his name John. John is the combo of two Hebrew words. Yahweh, very short abbreviation of that at the front end of this, and the word for grace. It's actually a form of the word grace. Gracious, the adjective. The Lord is gracious is what the word John means. The Lord is gracious. Now, that all fits. Prayers, incense goes up. Angel shows up. God's answered your prayer. He is gracious. He's going to give you the answer to your prayer. You're going to have a kid. You call him. Yahweh is gracious. God is gracious. The Lord is gracious. Verse 15. For he will be great before the Lord. Verse 16. Talk about a powerful ministry. He will turn many of the children of Israel to the Lord their God. Verse 17. And he, who's the he? That's John, his son, will go before him. Who him? The Lord their God. Think that through now. He, John's going to go before the Lord their God in the spirit and power of Elijah. Remember, he's got a seminary degree. This guy's a priest. He studied the law. He studied the prophets. He studied the Torah. He knows what the Bible says. And here's what he's reading in that very simple statement there. The Lord is coming. My kid is the predecessor to the Lord coming. And he's going to come in the spirit and the power of Elijah. Now, that's how Malachi ends. That's the end of the Old Testament. It talks about the coming of the Lord. And it says it will be preceded by the coming of Elijah, the ministry of Elijah. He knows what he's saying here. My kid is going to be that prophetic figure that the rabbis have been expounding on for 400 years since Malachi wrote it. this is a big deal. It must have been an amazing, mind-blowing thing that he just heard. Clearly it was. What I'd like to note before we go any further, though, is the context in which it takes place. This is a country priest who serves 2 weeks out of the year, who lives way down in the hill country of Judea. I mean, miles from Jerusalem. He's not a professional scholar. He's not a downtown priest. He is just your country priest who works a bivocational job doing something besides being a priest. And yet he's given himself to walk circumspectly and carefully and obediently to do what God asks him to do. And he finds himself here faithfully carrying out his responsibilities when God shows up and says, time for you to step up. I just love that picture, and I see it so often in the Bible, and that is the people that God chooses to use in great ways in the Bible usually are caught simply going about their work, being faithful and obedient. Let's start with that parallel. Number one on your outline. That's a lot to get to number one, but let's jot it down. Just like Zechariah, if we're going to be useful to God, we need to be faithful and obedient. Let's just work at that. People that are willing to say, I will be as faithful and obedient as I can at the thing God has called me to do right now. Because that is who we find God reaching for, to take off the bench, so to speak, and to put into the game to do something that really far exceeds anything you could have ever asked or imagined. That's the kind of thing that we do to prepare ourselves to be used in any way God would want us to be used. Oh, we all need to be willing and ready to do whatever God wants. But you want to prepare for that? Just do what you're called to do and do it as faithfully as you can and be as clean and as biblical and as godly and as righteous as you can in your daily behavior. Keep your finger here in Luke 1 and turn with me, if you would, to 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. And here is one of the greatest summaries of what we just read in the narrative of Luke 1. A faithful, obedient guy, walking carefully in the commandments and statutes of the Lord, who God reaches out and says, I need to use you to raise the Elijah that was to come, John the Baptist. Take a look at how it's put. Let's get some context in verse 19. The firm foundation stands, God's firm foundation. Perhaps that's an allusion to the church, as he's called the church, the pillar and foundation of the truth. Bearing this seal, this is 2 Timothy 2:19. The Lord knows those who are his. That's probably more than knowledge, gnosko. That's a word often talking about God's love and his involvement and his intimacy with his people. He loves his people, perhaps, what we're getting at there. More on that another time. Then the second thing is, let everyone who names the name of the Lord depart from iniquity. Right? We're talking now about sanctification. Live a godly life. Now he illustrates it, verse 20. Now in a great house, a big house, there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay. Some are for honorable use and others for dishonorable. Therefore, verse 21, if anyone cleanses himself from what is dishonorable, he will be a vessel for honorable use, set apart as holy, love this next line, useful to the master of the house, ready for every good work. Read that again. If I want to be ready to be used, useful to the master, I need to cleanse myself, verse 21, of all that is dishonorable. Then I'll be a vessel for honorable use, set apart as holy. Speaking now of my lifestyle, useful, because holy people are useful to God, useful to the master of the house, ready for every good work. Then he gets into specifics. So what do you work on? Work on being as great as you can in this generation of Christians? That's not really the strategy. The strategy here is, verse 22, flee youthful passions, pursue righteousness, pursue things like faith and love and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. I don't know what God's going to call you to do in your generation, in your family, in your workplace, in your neighborhood. I have no idea. But here's the deal. You should be ready. And to get ready, be faithful at what you do, just like Zechariah was, and work on being godly. Work on being pure in your heart. Make sure that you're working on having the kind of heart that's responsive to what God's word has to say. Then God will use you. We find this in a lot of people in the Bible. Amos, out working as a farmer in Tekoa, not far from Zechariah's house in the hill country of Judea, actually. Tekoa was, and he's a faithful farmer. He says, I'm not a prophet nor the son of the prophet. Remember that? But God's called me to step up, and I did it. Just faithful about my work. Gideon, what's he doing? Midian's oppressing them. He's out there. He's actually hiding in a wine press, which is used for pressing out wine, and he's threshing grain in the wine press. He's just out there trying to provide for his family, faithfully doing his work. God shows up, calls him to do something great. Deliver Israel from the Midianites. You got Moses working for his father-in-law out there in the Midian desert, in the desert, rather, outside of Egypt, telling his father-in-law, you know, whatever you need me to do, I'll do. And he's tending the sheep. David doing the same thing, working hard, not even aspiring to great things. And the prophet shows up, Samuel, to anoint him to be the king. All I'm saying is I want to be careful to be faithful and obedient. I like to put it this way. God often calls people to step up, who do the little things with the faithfulness that most people only bring to the big things. Okay? I mean, here was Zechariah, frankly, probably living a more circumspect, faithful life than a lot of the downtown priests who were big shots. Who knows? Maybe even than the high priest himself. And because they were doing their lives, living their lives with a kind of faithfulness and care that most people only bring to the big events and the big stages of Christianity, if you will. That's the people that God chooses to step up. I need you, going to use you, going to reach into the tool chest drawer of the church, pick someone to do something important. He often picks those who are being faithful. And didn't Jesus say that often in his teaching? If you're faithful in a little, you'll be faithful in a lot. That's what I'm looking for. By the way, one more thing before we leave this point of being ready to be used by God, enlisted by God. Think about, just jot this down, we won't take time to turn there, but John chapter 15, verse 2. John 15, you know that, Sunday school grads, that's the passage about the vine and the branches. Remember that? The second verse puts it this way. You don't bear fruit, cut you off, cast you away. Okay? If you do bear fruit, this is the second half of verse 2 in John 15. He prunes every branch that bears fruit so that it'll produce even more fruit. Now think this through. Here is a branch doing a good job. The vine dresser doesn't ignore it. The vine dresser, who Jesus is my father, comes and prunes it. Ouch. I don't want to be pruned, right? No, I'm going to prune you so that you'll bear even more fruit. I mean, you think Zechariah was a blessing to his town, to his village, to his family? Well, sure he was. He's a godly man, probably a wise, godly person. Well, God puts him through some pain. And the only pain we know about in this text is that he is infertile, right? He and his wife can't have kids, which I told you as I read the text is even more of a disgrace and a reproach than most of us can imagine, even though many of you, as I did for 10 years of my marriage, struggled without kids, right? Went through years of all the treatments and trying to see if we could have, and we know the pain of not having children. It was even worse in those days. And that pain in this context certainly would give us something of a biblical principle regarding the way God uses pain to prepare people. Doesn't James 1 say it explicitly, starting in verse 2? You ought to count it all joy, my brothers, when you encounter various trials. Why? Knowing that the testing of your faith produces perseverance, and let perseverance have its perfect work. Let it play itself completely out, so that you may be teleos. Have you heard that word from this platform enough? Teleos. What do I like to translate it this way. Being just right. Being prepared in just the right way. Teleos. It's translated in that text, perfect in the ESV. Right? Lacking in nothing. God is going to take people who, as it's put in 2 Timothy 2, ready for every good work, who he has not only prepared with faithfulness and obedience, but people that are faithful and obedient even when their prayers aren't answered, even when they're hurting. As Tozer liked to say, he rarely uses anyone greatly, God that is, until he hurts them deeply. There's something about the pruning process that will help us, if we understand it, look at our own pain differently. And you need to look at your own pain differently. Think it through. We can't be people that just hurt and go, oh, God, just take it away. I don't want any, and ignoring it. Look at it, as James says we should, as the testing of our faith in God, so that that testing could produce something in our character he calls perseverance, hupomene, the ability to hold up under the pressure, so that we can build a kind of sterling character so that God can have us ready, teleos, perfectly equipped to do whatever he calls us to do, lacking nothing. Do you think the years of infertility prepared Zechariah and Elizabeth to raise the most important preacher in all of the Bible, barring Jesus himself? Absolutely. And that pain was preparation, and you need to see your pain that way. You need to think that through next time God doesn't answer your prayer and you're in some protracted illness or sickness or difficulty or trial and you're going, man, I don't like. God's preparing you. It's the seminary of pain, right? There's a seminary you go to prepare your mind, but there's a seminary, if you will, a preparatory Bible college, if you will, that takes place when you go through personal trials and pain. Don't disregard it. Matter of fact, it's very counterintuitive, but James chapter 1, verse 2 says, count it all joy. Look at it in a more positive light and recognize that that pain is preparing you to a kind of usefulness in the future that maybe you can't even imagine right now as you keep praying really simplistically to just have the pain go away. Zechariah and Elizabeth were prepared by their years of deprivation and infertility to be useful, be faithful in obedience. And I might add parenthetically, even when your life is filled with disappointment or hurt, to be useful, be faithful and obedient. Sometimes though, we recognize, as we do with Zechariah here, that when God calls his man or his woman to step up to do something for him, we find that even the faithful people lack faith when that happens. We left the story off there in verse 17. Let's pick it up in verse 18. We're going to find Zechariah here, godly man. He's going to show that he doesn't have the trust in God that he should have. It says, and Zechariah responds to the angel. He says this to the angel, how shall I know this? He says, I'm an old man. Matter of fact, here's the implication. I don't think I can know this. I don't think I can believe this. For I am an old man, and my wife is advanced in years. You're calling me in to be the parent of someone super important, so important that Malachi prophesied that he was coming? I'm telling you what, you called the wrong number here, right? Not me. Can't happen. Look at this. Now, here's one of the biggest ironies of this text. What did he just do? He offered incense on the altar, which was what? Symbolic of the prayers of the saints. Gabriel had just said to him, the angel had just said to him, right? God has answered your prayers. What does that imply? You have prayed for a kid. God's showing up to say, here's your kid. And you're saying, I can't believe that. It isn't going to happen. You see the conflict? The contradiction? I mean, you're telling me you've been praying for something and you don't even believe it's happening when it happens? That's how a lot of our prayer gets, is it not? Our prayer gets to a place where we lose expectancy in our praying. And here's a guy who's faithful and godly, and he's praying through his pain, but in a sense we learn he doesn't even really expect God to answer his prayer. That's a sad place to be. It's not only a sad place to be, that's a place where you're going to get God angry. And in this case, the messenger of God angry. Verse 19, the angel answered him, I am Gabriel. Now up to this point, we don't have his name. And here's the play on words we miss, which is great. The reason he gives his name, I got to think, and Gabriel's name and what it means. And it's usually translated this, strangely enough, the man of Elohim, the man of God. Now, that's a weird name for an angel, right? Sometimes they translate it hero of God because it's such a conflicting idea. But, you know, it has that sense of you're standing strong and you're a person who believes God and you trust God. You're a man of God. You're a hero of God. Well, the play on words here is that when it comes to God's answered your prayer, you're going to have a kid. Zechariah says, I'm an old man, right? And the angel turns back and he says, listen, I'm the man of God, right? You may not be trusting God. I certainly trust God. I'm the man of God. Not only that, I stand, bottom of verse 19, in the presence of God. And I was sent to speak to you to bring you this euangelion. Euangelion. Have you heard that word? And that means what? Good news. It's also translated into English, gospel. It's the first reference, by the way, one of the few references that Luke employs the word gospel in the Gospel of Luke. And here he says the angel brings him good news. Now, this happens on two levels. Don't lose that. Level number one is you and your wife have been praying for a kid. I got good news. You're going to have a kid. But between verses 14 and 15, we learn this isn't any ordinary kid. This is a kid that's going to be great in God's economy. This is going to be the kid that is going to prepare the way of the Lord. And that's an answer to the prayers not only of two infertile people. That's an answer to the prayers of an entire nation. The good news is, in your level, in your life, you're going to have this kid. On the bigger level, the Messiah is coming, and your kid's going to set the table, so to speak, for the Messiah. Verse 20, and behold, you will be silent and unable to speak until the day these things take place. You want to know that Gabriel was frustrated and angry? He's mad at Zechariah for going, oh, I can't believe that's going to happen. And he inflicts him here with disciplinary action. You want to sit there and mouth off with me about your excuses why God can't do this? You'll be mute for 9 months. Why? Because he did not, well, let's read it. Because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their time. God is going to do it. Why do you doubt him? And all the people were waiting for Zechariah, verse 21, and they wondered at his delay in the temple. Now, here's the thing. The Old Testament was very clear, both by precept and by example, that you cannot mess around in the temple or you will die, right? Have we seen enough of that in the Old Testament? I mean, he had no problem killing off his priests who go in there with irreverence and do things their own way. You think this guy is godly, and you're sitting outside going, oh, Zechariah's been in there way too long, man. Maybe he was a fraud after all. I don't know. You're thinking he's struck dead or something. You want to go in and get him? I don't want to go in and get him. We'll wait a little longer. I mean, you're concerned about the poor guy. They're waiting for him to come out. And while they're kind of wondering what's going on, finally, verse 22, he comes out unable to speak to them. Now, here's what you need to understand, which I haven't explained yet, but there was something you said. The Talmud talked about before you went in to do the incense. And then there was something that the priests were to say when they came out, which was from the book of Numbers, the Aaronic blessing, Aaron's blessing. And the blessing was given in the Old Testament. You remember that, the Aaronic blessing? The Lord, keep you, watch over you. May his face shine upon you. May he lift up his countenance toward you. May he give you peace, right? The Aaronic blessing. That was the tradition. And they did this very risky, scary thing they only did once in their life. And they had one opportunity to stand out and to give the blessing of the great first high priest and to say, you know, Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you. All of that was the end of this exciting, you know, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. He comes out mute. He can't speak. He can't even pronounce the blessing he's waited his whole life to pronounce on the people of God. And they realize there's a problem here. This guy's seen a vision in the temple, and he kept making signs to them, right? He's learning a crash course in sign language, couldn't speak. And when the time of his service had ended, he went to his home with an assignment, and it was time for him to tell his wife all that had happened. Now, here's the deal. He stumbled in his faith, having prayed for something, and then when it came time to get that thing, he didn't believe God. I don't want you to make the same mistake that Zechariah made. Let's jot it down like this. Prepare to have your faith stretched. If you're saying, as I'm assuming we're all saying, God, I want to be used by you to do something, whatever it is. I'll be the water boy. I'll be the towel guy, the equipment key. I'll be the running back, the defensive back. I'll be the quarterback. I'll be whatever you want me to be. I will just be faithful and obedient in doing what I'm doing. I'll see my pain as preparation. I'll just keep serving you as faithfully as I can. Then know this, that at some point, I'm assuming God's going to call you to step up to something. And when he does call you to step up to something providentially or by his spirit, and you make that clear connection that it's time for me to step up here, I just want you to know you could stumble like Zechariah did by going, I don't know if I believe I can do this, because I see it throughout the Bible. I talked about Midian in the wine press. Do you know what his response was when it said, okay, time for you to step up, let's go. You're going to deliver Israel from the Midianites. What did he say? Do you know it, Bible scholars? What did he say? I can't. My clan is the weakest and smallest in all of Israel. I can't do that. Jeremiah, we talked about that, our daily Bible reading. How did that start in chapter 1? You're going to go and you'll be a mouthpiece for me in this nation. Zedekiah needs to hear from you. All the kings of the south at the end of this reign. Well, you need to go and preach. And what did Jeremiah say? Can't do that. How can I do that? I'm just a kid. I'm just a teenager. I don't have the clout to do that. We see it over and over and over. Even Moses, this paragon of godliness, right? A guy who's humble, the Bible says. Humbler, more humble than anybody. He stumbles with faith, right? I could give you all kinds of personal anecdotes from my own life. This is the reality of it all. Get ready to have a God use you in ways you never thought you could be utilized.
Would you be ready when God calls you into the big game? You're listening to Focal Point and a message from Pastor Mike Fabares called Zechariah, God's Doubting Senior. Remember, you can download free audio files and study notes when you go to focalpointradio.org. Well, this time of year, we love to share letters from our listeners, like Todd in Michigan, who writes, "Today's message was so God-sent, and I was truly blessed. It's surely one I'll share and listen to again. I'm so compelled by Thanksgiving. I wanted to send a donation that's been a long time coming. We struggle financially, supporting a Christian school and our church, but I'm sure God will bless even a small donation. He does such wondrous things. Thanks for letting God use you to share His Word." Well, thanks for your sacrificial offering, Todd. Maybe like Todd, you're feeling nudged to do something more as well. As you consider the impact these studies have made in your life, do your part and act by giving a donation that reflects your passion for Focal Point. Call 888-320-5885 or give securely online at focalpointradio.org. You know, God uses ordinary people to accomplish extraordinary things. And you'll find proof when you read 50 People Every Christian Should Know by Warren Wiersbe. This reads like a who's who of Christian greats. Spurgeon, Moody, Edwards, Taylor, Chambers, Tozer. They're all here in this handy reference. 50 People Every Christian Should Know is yours for a financial gift to Focal Point this month. And it makes a great Christmas gift. Call 888-320-5885 or go to focalpointradio.org. While you're there, check out the free booklet, A Thankful Heart in a World of Hurt. Get your complimentary copy in time for Thanksgiving by calling 888-320-5885. You can also write to Focal Point. It's Post Office Box 2850, Laguna Hills, California, 92654. I'm Dave Drewy, inviting you back again tomorrow when Mike Fabares wrestles with the jaws of legalism. It's time to Ask Pastor Mike, Friday on Focal Point. Today's program was produced and sponsored by Focal Point Ministries.